Conference is being recorded.
Why don't we first discuss what we want to cover for the hour, maybe, and then at the end we'll decide when we want to meet again. But I hope we've all had a chance to read what Nirazu has sent to all of us, our compilation of ideas and key points from what we've read. Do we want to individually talk about briefly key points and then go from there, or do you want to take another approach?
I like the approach of everyone just talking about their article, key points of the article, not the whole thing. What do you ladies think?
That's fine with me.
Oh, yeah, I don't have a preference.
Okay.
Well, mine, when I was typing out my key points, I made them pretty brief, and I noticed that you guys went a little bit more elaborate, but let me elaborate a little bit with what I read. I read two articles, both by Ido Gal, and in general, two things that I saw. One was his model of statistical literacy, combining the five knowledge elements with attitudes and beliefs, and we had talked about that quite a bit last time as well. What really struck me is one thing is, he said most adults in the United States have not taken a statistics course, and he was looking at adults across, adults in society as opposed to students of statistics. And I found it very interesting that when you're looking at the five knowledge elements, yes, we're looking at their knowledge of statistics and mathematics, but also we're looking at clearly their literacy skills. And I noticed with students that sometimes they'll place into a math course, but maybe will not have placed into a credit-bearing English course. I don't know how that is at four-year universities, but we have developmental English courses and developmental math courses that are not credit-bearing that they have to take before they go into a credit-bearing course. So maybe they placed into a pre-calculus, but they haven't placed into a credit-bearing English course yet. Mm-hmm. And I thought that would be really something interesting to look into is what are the prerequisites that we expect a student coming into a stats course. We have two different stats courses at my school. One prerequisite is intermediate algebra. The other has a prerequisite of pre-calculus. But I've never looked at English as a prerequisite. And the other, as far as their context knowledge, that's another of their five knowledge elements that he had talked about. Their context knowledge, I would certainly think that age is a factor there. And again, teaching at a community college, we have a broad range of ages, which I believe also at the four-year schools. But age certainly would be a factor, as well as life experience. And are we looking at our introductory statistics courses as a freshman class? We call it introductory statistics, but is it a freshman class? Should it be a sophomore-level class? And then the other piece that I found very interesting in his other article was that we should use the media to teach statistical literacy, and that we should use the help of statistical agencies, and specifically he spoke about press releases that would be released to the public from these agencies, executive summaries as well. And he listed, and I'll list these briefly, four benefits of those, of looking at press releases and executive summaries, that students would be prepared to interpret and evaluate good statistical reporting, that sometimes we just show them, okay, this is a bad example, this is what you shouldn't do, but they don't see enough of what is good. It would increase students' awareness of difficulties in reporting, that they can see that someone in reporting an article had to leave some things out and keep some things in, and they can kind of just look at through example after example what do you stress and what do you leave and what do you leave out. It would improve their communication skills in a statistical context with statistical terms, and also you could cover a range of topics within one example. So those are key things that I thought in his two articles that really struck me.
Okay.
I don't know who wants to go next up.
I can go if no one else is.
Okay.
So I did the last two articles on the sheet that Nirazu sent out. I did the Wallman, Enhancing Statistical Literacy, and the SUI, which talked a lot about numeracy. A lot of the warmer. Were you all there?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Sorry. A lot of the Warman article, for the most part, dealt with ways that they weren't specifically just talking about educating statistical literacy through class, in the classroom or whatever else. They were talking about, in general, you know, ways that we can educate citizens. So they talked a lot about. They talked a little bit about the media. They talk about the work that the AFA has done with the media in terms of including boxes to explain how polls were conducted and so forth. And, you know, the article, you know, the biggest thing that I got out of it was the definition that they actually offered, because I felt like a lot of the things that they were talking about, that Warman talked about, was just basically bigger than what we were interested in at, as far as when I was reading it. Now, the Surrey article, in terms of getting of wisdom and talking about numeracy, again, they were talking more about statistical literacy. Well, they were using numeracy, but it really was functional numeracy, synonymous with statistical literacy. And again, they were talking more in the broader context. So they were talking about approaches, of course, programs and statistics for schools, but also courses for adult learners that can help the general population. It was interesting because the author proposes some approaches, and the approaches that the author proposes is basically saying that the statisticians really should take responsibility for not just educating people about statistics in the context of a classroom or a program, but in every aspect. So even if a client hires you to do some sort of work, you need to make sure that the client understands the statistics behind everything and the reasoning, not just the results that you present. So again, in both of these articles, it was a little broader than I thought that we were looking for, but I thought the Warman definition, especially of statistical literacy, was interesting. She says it's the ability to understand and critically evaluate statistical results that permeate our daily lives, coupled with the ability to appreciate the contributions that statistical thinking can make in public, private, professional, and personal decisions. And that's kind of, you know, the whole real-world approach that I think we've all been trying to get at, so... That's pretty much my two articles.
Thank you. Nirasa, you want to go next, or I'll go next?
I'm trying to write, so...
Okay. I'm trying to find the page where my article is. Okay. I can go next. My article summary starts on the third page. So the first one was George Cobb, Mere Literacy is Not Enough, which I have... I scanned, if it's out of a book, so I scanned it if anyone wants to read it. But the author makes the argument that, you know, quantitative thinking is much increasingly important because of computers. I mean, there's just a lot more data out there. And he breaks down quantitative reasoning into four different arenas, and then he gives an example that combines all four of them. So the first one being computational or algorithmic, which is just actually crunching the numbers. Logical deductive, which is sort of the abstraction that you make from the specific problem to more generally solving other problems. Visual dynamic, just using graphs and gleaning as much information as can be gleaned from a graph. And verbal interpretive, which is, you know, how do you put that into English, you know, from math to English, and then what sort of conclusions can you draw from it, from the problem? So he suggests, you know, teaching a problem with those four different elements in there. Excuse me. And then he goes on to talk about a continuum of quantitative reasoning and how it affects students' future job prospects, for example, starting off with just simple calculation with just one variable and then going increasing to solving problems in a particular context. So that uses a higher level of his four types of quantitative reasoning. It uses more of them. It's a broader context. There's algorithms in it, and there's generally specialized applications. And then the highest level he describes being reasoning about relationships. So there are no fixed patterns. The context is open. And then talks again about that the jobs, the basic number crunching things can be done by computers, and so those jobs will be disappearing and that people will need to be trained to be thinking more abstract, you know, so they can be employable and more functional in society. So that was the first one, my summary of the first article I read. The second one on the next page is Jessica Utz, What Educated Citizens Should Know About Stats and Probability. Mm-hmm. And in this article, she talks about seven common topics that are misunderstood, and she gives several examples from classroom situations to the media where for something like cause and effect and understanding the difference between an observational study. So, for example, if you read an article in the paper or if a student reads an article in the paper and it's an observational study and they draw a cause and effect conclusion from it, that's a common error in reasoning people make. And then there were some other ones. A statistically significant problem might not be very important, practically speaking. Low power, just not having enough power in the sample. Biases in surveys, in particular just the way questions are worded. And she gave an example of ordering of questions, how researchers can set up respondents to be inclined to answer the second question in a certain way because of the wording of the first question. Coincidences, confusion of the inverse, average versus normal. So those are my two articles.
Okay. Roland, I don't know if that's how you say his name. Okay. Mainly he was talking about making statistics relevant, making it interesting, trying to figure out how to something that you use in real life. And he gives examples of, talking about historical figures that contributed to the field just to make it more numbers. And he gives the example of Gossett and his about the Louisman Patton murder case, how they solved that using part of the evidence in that case was statistical evidence, just so they can students can see the relevance of that of statistics addresses a real life question. And it was kind of interesting reading about the part about history because last month there was a webinar that talked about that, about using history and linking history to what we teach, make it relevant. So that was a pretty short article, and that was the main. I took up Andy's suggestion of reading the How People Learn.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see from a lot of, I went through and put key points for each chapter.
Mm-hmm.
As in summary, like a systems approach that's what I got out of it, that you can't just look at environment, you have to look at the teachers teaching. If you're going to make any changes, we can't keep doing the same thing and expect. If we're now focusing on physical literacy, change the way we teach, facilitate that. That's kind of what I got out of it. I like the idea of looking at what expert and novice get to be literate. Because I was thinking of it in that context. They were not talking about statistics, but, you know, they're talking more generally about learning. But I was reading it with this mind, and I like the fluent, the difference between being able to just recall knowledge and being able to recall the right relevant information, so you don't have to then quickly sift through what you know to get to what you need, so you can actually focus on the problem rather than on finding information. And that's what an expert would do, as opposed to a novice. It reminded me of when people have, the students have an open book, and they spend so much time just going through hoping to find an answer, so they're not really sure what they're looking for, so they don't have that expertise to know, well, this is the problem, this is where I'll find it. And then the idea of transfer kind of ties in with that relevance, making it relevant to the real world, and how we teach if we don't use real world data. It's hard for students to make that transfer from what they learn in the classroom to real life. Ultimate goal is not just from one class to another, but from school, from the school setting, classroom setting, to real life, to use that knowledge. Again, they were not talking about knowledge, but that's kind of how I was looking at it as I was reading. I guess that's pretty much. Oh, the other thing that I also like is get the environment. I think a lot of times we tend to one or the other, but seeing that they're not mutually exclusive, they overlap, and we need to look at all elements, like forward environment, learner-centered, knowledge-centered, assessment-centered, and community-centered. And it's not that you should do one or the other. It's that you look at elements from all four. It's going to be effective, so they're mutually supportive.
With community-centered, I wasn't sure what that was referring to. Is that like doing service learning or something like that?
Something like that, yes.
Okay. I was also really curious about the up at the top of the second page, caution that overly contextualized knowledge can reduce transfer versus abstract representation. I highlighted that because I was thinking, wow, because my textbook, the textbook that we're using here this semester, is making a big effort to focus on the context when analyzing problems. So I was just sort of blown away by seeing that there.
I get the sense that they're talking about, look at it just in that one setting, it becomes difficult to see application to other settings.
Okay.
That's how I read it. That if you look at it just as addressing one type of problem or in one type of setting, it becomes difficult to see how you can apply that same concept in a different
Okay. Thank you.
So where do we go from here? Is there a common theme that we see to things that we read or something that interests all of us that can kind of put us in a straighter direction? There's a lot out there.
I guess I'm curious about, and I guess maybe Bob or Andy could answer this. I mean, how focused should we be on at this point? Have we done enough of a literature study, or do we have, would you suggest more of a literature study, or...
Yes, I think we would suggest more. You've looked at a couple pieces of literature each.
Mm-hmm.
You've done some summaries of it, and now you just reported back to each other. But this is still pretty broad, what you've looked at across these articles. And I don't think you need to be in any particular place right now. But one thought would be, some discussion about what are some of the possible things then you might focus in on. I don't want to say you should focus in right away either, but just so what might you do with this? Where might you go in the next couple of times when you have your conversations to try to start seeing if is there one or two things that everybody is finding of interest, and then you would want to broaden your you'd want to get a deeper literature base within those particular areas, if I'm making some sense there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Andy, do you have something to add? Or?
No, I think Bob's right. You definitely need, you don't need to have a research question or anything like that at this point. And whether if you've done enough of a literature search, no.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
What, six articles?
So.
All right. Well, can I go? This is Georgette. One of the things that I have been getting more interested in as I've been reading this, and I read some other articles as well. I was just digging around with the references, is instructional methods and cognitive theory is something that I found myself reading a lot of. How about you guys?
This is Jennifer. One thing that was mentioned specifically in the 2003 GAL article was that there's a need to identify press releases and executive summaries that these statistics agencies could produce, particularly suited for use in classes that aim to promote statistics literacy. Now, that was in 2003. I don't know if that need still exists. I imagine that it hasn't been exhausted, but they were looking to develop guidelines and suggestions for linking those materials to specific course elements or topics. So it sounds like that collaboration is needed between the statistics agencies and the educators in order to teach the statistics literacy, to promote statistics literacy, to bring the media into the classroom, and to make a bank of these articles that are available. I know the U.S. Census Bureau does that a lot, but it has on its website, it has some lesson plans, and those I looked at were kind of more geared to K-12, but I'm thinking that that's in line with what he was referring to a couple places in this article, that we just need to make it easier for educators to have one place to go to and say, hey, this would be great. If you want to teach hypothesis testing, here's something that's in the media under, you know, here's a science example, here's a, science, biology, business, et cetera.
So, Jennifer, this is Aisha. Can you clarify a little for me in terms of what specific question related to media use in the classroom you're interested in? Is it a matter of, is it being done? Is it a matter of?
The article suggested that at this point we're using things in newspapers,
mm-hmm.
And I'm not quoting him, but this is a general feel that I got from the article. We're using textbook examples that have applications, certainly, and that also maybe we're looking in newspaper articles and magazines, but the focus here was let's go to a statistical organization that this is what they do. They produce the statistics, and they have great examples of how statistics is actually used, and there's different levels of that. There's your short press release, there's your executive summary, and then there's the full report. And if a student was able to see those three, the summary, the press release, what we actually see, then the executive summary, and then the full report, that just with seeing those three different articles, that they could see what was left in, what was taken out.
So we would kind of try to, I'm just, again, trying to wrap my head around what this would look like as a research, possible research question.
Yeah.
We would try to look into taking some of these media reports into our classrooms and seeing how students reacted or something like that, possibly?
Well, I didn't. I hadn't gotten that far with it. I was thinking more as educators, mm-hmm. how we would collaborate with the statistics agencies. And then he also talked about three different levels of statistics agencies, but specifically here the ones that are publicly funded. And again, I don't know how much of that is already done. That's something maybe that I would look into, or we could look into more. But I was just thinking that that's something that we could look further into as far as research. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Could I mention something that is on COSWEB?
Mm-hmm.
If you go to professional development and look mm-hmm. under readings, there's an article by Deborah Rumsey
mm-hmm.
Called Statistical Literacy as a Goal for Introductory Statistics Courses. And she actually has two links that she that collect stories, the Chance News and the Data and Story Library, which has journal articles and things from the media that you can use in the classroom. So there would be a source for things. If we were to do something like that, then we could possibly check out those two sources to find something to use in the classroom.
He did refer to a Chance article. I'd have to look it up. I think this was more specific than that. I think it's looking into something more technical than, because I've used the Data and Stories Library also, and I think it's getting more at the heart of, you know, something produced from a statistician.
Okay.
I mean, perhaps that's there at the Chance, you know, in the Chance News as well.
Jennifer, it sounds like what you were reading about is going back to what an expert does. What does a statistician do? So students can see that and see a full report of, like, as opposed to maybe some of the abbreviated reports that we usually see in newspaper articles. Or
yes, and they said that there was value in looking at abbreviated reports versus full articles, so that students could see the difficulties in getting that abbreviated report. You know, what did one person decide that was important to put in the summary as opposed to from the full report?
Mm-hmm.
But there's learning involved in that as well.
I think that would be particularly more important now that they're laying off journalists left and right, so that leaves press releases, you know, from companies, you know, free to, you know, include or just, you know, not include, you know, sources and that kind of thing, sample descriptions or whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, well, and then the other part piece to that is as I'm reading through the articles, I noticed at the end it said, you know, this is where further research is needed. And this is what he had mentioned in this article, and I was going to ask you guys the same. You know, did you see something at the end of your articles that said, okay, here's where further research is needed?
Mine didn't say specifically here's where further research is needed. It was more along the line of this is what we should do. Again, both of my articles dealt more with educating the general population. So as I mentioned, in one of the articles, they also talk about setting up free statistical, community statistical services that where statisticians would volunteer their time and that sort of stuff. So I didn't really have, neither of my articles really dealt specifically with further research. They were basically putting out some of their approaches. I do want to say, though, in terms of things that jumped out, that I have been reading, not for this project, but for another project, I've been reading a lot about one of the points that Myra's article brought up in terms of how experts differ from novices.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, of course it will depend on what our final question comes out to be, but I think it would be interesting if, no matter what we're doing, that we try to make some comparisons. Because I think I've been telling you guys for a long time, I'm very much interested in how students unpack their information in terms of when you give them a big problem, how exactly are they going about, categorizing the different information and, you know, pulling out the relevant stuff. And it had not occurred to me until maybe about 6 months ago that it might be a good comparison to try to figure out, what are the experts doing? you know, how are they doing, as opposed to just what I personally do, just trying to get in there and observe some of the statisticians as they work through problems. So,
Well, I liked when Neuratsu said when she explained that experts can quickly identify what's relevant without having to go through all the knowledge, and she compared that to going, if you have a book that's open, you know, do you know where you're going, or are you just flipping through the pages? I really liked that concept as well. That idea. I'm also interested in that.
Yeah, me too, actually.
Yeah. I know one of my colleagues right now is doing a study specifically looking at standard deviation and expert understanding of standard deviation versus student or novice understanding of standard deviation, not just a matter of what is the definition, but, you know, how fundamentally what it is. Looking at, you know, different ways that experts think of standard deviation, looking at different ways that experts know how to compute standard deviation, and it's just very interesting, some of the differences that he's seeing. And I just wonder, you know, are there some, you know, sometimes when I look at some of his tapes, because he's videotaping, and I'm thinking to myself, why would the student think that? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would they think that? This is what it really is. And again, because in most of our classes, we're not having the students doing these think alouds, so we don't know when they say significance, what they really mean, or what is the barrier that is keeping them from seeing the exact same, or not the exact, but getting the same ideas that we have of these statistical terms, of these statistical concepts. So,
it sounds like it ties in with kind of the art article, looking at those common misconceptions that students have. It'd be kind of interesting to pick those and see how students understand them, you know, doing the what you're describing, Aisha. Looking at what are some of the most common perceptions and about them. How do they understand them, as opposed to how somebody who thinks about them.
And even, you know, I guess it's not so much, you know, is it that they understand this differently because of the whole statistical literacy thing?
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Is it because they're not?
Because we can go back to, well, how are we teaching it that they understand it, assuming they're not understanding it the way we would like them to?
Yeah.
What can we do to change how we teach it so that they do get it?
But there's the issue, too, though, that, I mean, I found in my experience that I understand statistics more the more I teach it, too, you know, and what that sort of, how much can we expect them to understand given their cognitive development up to that point, you know?
Yeah, Kenneth Nairadza, do you remember at US Cuts we were having a discussion and you talked about the fact that you were interested in, you were talking about, well, if we are approaching statistics kind of like a foreign language, well, students with who are taking Spanish, for instance, don't they go to class for, you know, every day? Do you know what I mean? To constantly use it. And so that kind of ties into what Georgette is saying in terms of how often are they using it. I know for my students, they're in class twice a week, you know, for an hour and 40 minutes at a time. And yeah, that's just a good point, Georgette.
And I think it also, again, we look back at what is their life experience, which would go hand in hand with their cognitive development at that time as well. But and that's where the model of statistical literacy that Gal listed in that one article, I mean, that really hit home to everything that we were talking about. How there's your knowledge base and your statistical knowledge and your mathematics context knowledge, all coupled with your attitudes and your beliefs. And I think that would be a certainly underscore the suggestions that have just been made.
So it sounds like we're coming back to the cognitive psychology stuff again.
Right.
Yes.
Maybe
good.
There's a reason for that. Now, with what are the ages of students that we're all teaching?
In the intro course?
Yeah.
Mine are all 20.
Okay.
And there's one that's 19 out of 40 students.
My students in my intro course, and my intro course is a little strange because it's actually a second statistics course,
mm-hmm.
but if students have a high enough math SAT score, they get placed in here, and also as well as people who did AP stats but didn't score high enough to get subbed out. Just so you guys all know, statistics is required for everyone on our campus.
Mm-hmm.
Except the bio majors. Bio majors are the only ones who are who can opt out of statistics as their general core requirement. They get to take calculus, but even the math majors have to take the second stats. And in my quote-unquote intro course, the students usually range from 17 to 19, so I have the freshmen coming in, and then I have some juniors who are putting it off until the very end. So,
so when you said their SAT score places them in there, they're the math and verbal or just math?
Just the math.
Mm.
Just the math.
I'm finding that interesting that we're only looking at math. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
My students are typically of two groups. One group, the early 20s, age group is 30. Class. My other group, they are graduate students, but they've been in the first class before, so they're older. This is
mm-hmm.
older, so they're in their late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Now and again, of course, you have some that waited a while and are in their, I don't know, 40s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's
Jennifer, I think that your remark is very interesting and something that I hadn't thought about, because with our second course, when we developed it, it specifically we use SAS in that course, and it's also a writing intensive course. It is designated writing intensive,
mm-hmm.
and I do have students who kind of almost fail this course because of their writing, and my poster at the U.S. Cards was one of the things I had talked about at U.S. Cuts previously, not this time, the time before. I had students who always used to say to me, is this an English class? Just
mm-hmm.
because I had them reading so much, I had them, because I use case studies, so they get all of the real-world data and all of the background and so forth, and it just never occurred to me until you said something just now that, is it really fair then to really be, you know, looking so much at it. But then my own personal feeling, when students tell me they're not good at math, I always tell them that's okay. You know, this is great because this isn't math, this is
mm-hmm. statistics. I do that too.
You're okay.
That always gets, that doesn't get them off the hook.
Right. You know, you're okay. Good. Yeah.
Well, when
mm-hmm.
I used to teach AP statistics at the high school level, and I noticed
mm-hmm.
that the students that were that were in my class maybe already had taken calculus at the AP level
mm-hmm.
or were taking it concurrently. And the ones that fared better in the calculus class
mm-hmm.
were sometimes struggling in the stats class.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it interesting that they wanted to use one-word answers and,
yes.
you know, X equals 20, and that's how they thought of math.
Yep.
And this whole, in all these readings of the statistical literacy coming up here again and again and again, and looking at, okay, it's not just what you know mathematically and statistically, it's what you know in context,
mm-hmm.
it's the critical questions that you're able to ask, and it's your literacy skills. So, and again, in the article that I read, it was very much talking about, and again, I'm paraphrasing, but it's a difficult concept. It's difficult for us to ask this of our students because there are so many levels of knowledge or levels of critical reasoning. It's not just, you know, here's X plus 3 equals 7 and solve it for X. Now, I know that the NCTM has definitely put the statistics into the K-12 more and more, but I think by the time that they get to us, there's still just not ready, they're not comfortable to take that mathematics, put it together with the English, and produce a paragraph. Or it really hit me too, Aisha, when I was working with a student this past week for advising, and they were ready to take statistics, but you know, just looking at the rest of their schedule, I thought, oh well, wait a minute, maybe not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that too, as far as their course load and just what they're ready for, cognitive development.
I guess when I, you know, I teach business students, so all of my students are business students, and so I always tell them, you know, this is applied course. You're not going to go up to your boss and say X equals 2 or whatever. And so we really do. They really kind of grasp the idea that they have to put things into, you know, understandable world, real world terms. You know, because and business students tend to be more pragmatic than, you know, because I've also taught just, you know, general ed or whatever, and they're definitely a difference with these students.
So it looks like we only have under 20 minutes left already. Where do we go?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, when you, Georgette, when you mentioned the Deb Rumsey article, I did, as one of the references in one of the articles I read, there was a Deb Rumsey article from 2002 that's called Statistical Literacy, Implications for Teaching, Research, and Practice. That was also in the International Statistical Review. And I circled that as maybe another reading that we could do. There was another one that's called, it's from Gelman, Nolan, Men, Warmerdam, and Bautista from 1998, Student Projects on Statistical Literacy in the Media. That was also in the American Statistician. But that's 1998, and then a third one, But How Do You Teach It? And that was in the International Statistical Review as well. A question that I have for maybe Bob and Andy is, has there been, should we not look back to a certain date? Has there been, should we look at things that are more recent, 2002, when, I mean, I know we need to look at all the literature, but I'm not sure. Are there dates that we should kind of keep a range of?
No, I don't think there's, you know, I think you should go back as far as you need to go back. Boy, that's a pretty loose answer there. But I think like doing literature review for any type of thesis, a master's or a PhD, you certainly want to be aware of what the current thinking is, and then that might take you back. You might need a historical perspective on why is the current perspective on statistical literacy what it is now. And when you get more current articles, they certainly will have, they should have references to earlier articles. And so, I mean, it's kind of a judgment call of how far back you need to go. And did we mention last time there was in the Journal of Statistics Education, I think it's in 2003, there was an article by Joan Garfield on statistical reasoning, Beth Chance on statistical thinking, Deb Rumsey on statistical literacy, and I had commentary on that. So I don't know if you've come across those, but that might be something to look at.
I have both of those articles. I have that I printed, the Marshall Lovett, Applying Cognitive Theory to Statistics Instruction. Sounds like exactly what we're all interested in. And then the Joan Garfield, seemed very similar to what we've read now, but would still be, I think, worthwhile to read.
Well, I pulled two other. Sorry, Bob. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that when we've talked about it, when I mean by we, like Andy, myself, and other stat ed researchers, even as recently as this summer, we agree that there's still no agreement on you know, common definitions for any of these things, and different people can see them meaning slightly or radically different things. Mm-hmm. So that if that statistical literacy is a common interest of all of you, one thing you would want to possibly work towards is what is your definition of statistical literacy, and that should be informed by what others have written out there.
Okay.
just a thought right now.
I had actually pulled two other Garfield articles that I thought was interesting. One was the older article, which was, I think, all the way back from 1995, How Students Learn Statistics, and then, which was an international statistical review, but there was also a more recent one from 2007 that Joan did with Danny Bensby about how students learn statistics revisited. And it just basically has a current review of research on teaching and learning statistics.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and it, you know, so I don't know if that, those are two articles that you might be interested in looking at.
Yeah.
Especially the one with the, you know, the current review.
Mm-hmm.
What's the reference for that again, Aisha? I'm writing it all down.
There,
oh.
Yeah, that's okay. There's a 1995 article by Garfield on how students learn statistics. And then there is a revisited article, Garfield and Bensby from 2007. And I can email you guys, if you're interested in these articles, I can email you the reference. But I think especially with the current review of research on teaching and learning statistics,
mm-hmm.
I think that will give us a lot of background information, you know, as to what has been done and so forth.
So do you think that would be something all of us should read and then maybe individually read something else or what? What do you think?
I think we should all read them.
I think, yeah, I think that, you know, the first one, How Students Learn Statistics, is very short, and
mm-hmm.
but the second one is just so rich.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that we would probably all come out with probably different things.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I'm thinking that kind of following up on what Bob said, that
mm-hmm.
read these articles, maybe pull out some elements so we can come up with what do we understand by statistical literacy? What does
okay.
or what makes up statistical literacy? So we can same page when we're talking about it.
So that's a good idea. I mean, like, maybe we could each sit down on our own and maybe do some brainstorming, you know, on
mm-hmm.
what exactly it is, and then we can all kind of bring that to the table and start working on our you know, united definition.
Sounds good.
Okay.
So do we want to
mm-hmm.
go ahead with the Garfield 1995 article, the Bensby 2000 and Garfield 2007 article, and how about the one from the Journal of Statistics Education 2003 that Bob had mentioned? That was one from Joan Garfield and one from Marcia Lovett. Was that correct?
The Joan Garfield was, I think Bob mentioned that one.
I actually, in 2003 in JSE, it's one by Dev Rumsey that's on statistical literacy.
Oh, okay.
Dev Rumsey.
But in that same issue, there's an article by Joan on statistical reasoning and an article by Beth Chance on statistical thinking.
Okay.
And then the Marcia Lovett one was in the American Statistician, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep, 2000.
And that was a more cognition, what cognitive psychology has to bring to the table in understanding how students learn statistics.
That one is, the reference is volume 54, number 3, page 196.
Can you email us that last
the Marcia?
Last one? Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay, I will.
So are we reading, what are we reading then? I think, I agree with Jennifer, we should probably definitely read that last one, the Marcia article.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you were saying, Jennifer?
I think so.
The cognitive.
Georgia, you read that, you said it's...
Yeah, it's great. I mean,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I definitely think we should all look at it.
Okay.
And, I mean, if we don't want to look at both of the Garfield articles, we can just look at the 2007 one,
mm-hmm.
Which was the...
Mm-hmm. The 1995 one you said was pretty short, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. But the 2007 one has... again, it depends on what you guys want.
Okay. So, Aisha, how about if you email us those two references?
Okay. Okay.
And then, Georgette, you're going to email us the Marcia Lovett one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And are we all set with the Journal of Statistics Education one, the 2000?
Yeah, that's online, so, you know, we can get that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So are we reading 4?
Yes, that's what it sounds like.
Well, the one from the Journal of Statistics Education, Bob had mentioned three different articles, Deb Rumsey, Joan Garfield, and Beth Chance. I don't know if we want to split those up, just kind of look at each of them. That might be a lot to look at within the month. I don't know. I don't know what you guys think.
It's only the first week of school. So maybe just one or maybe we could split them up.
Okay. And then if we think they're, you know, something that the whole group should read, then we could. Okay. I'll take the Deb Rumsey one.
Okay. I'll take the Beth Chance.
Okay, and I can do the Garfield, that's fine.
Okay.
Wait, we need another one. What about me?
Pick one.
You, and then, Narazu?
Oh, Tim Dane.
Narazu, you can read my commentary on those three articles in the same issue.
Okay.
Okay.
So there's a Delmas article there, too, that's short.
Oh, good, I'll take that one.
All right.
Okay. So we're all reading three, and then each of us is reading one on our own.
So the three are the Asha one, the Garfield one, and the Garfield Revisited?
Yes.
Three? Okay.
That's my understanding. Is that
did you say Marcia?
Yeah.
Marcia Lovett.
Marcia Lovett. Okay, good. Okay, I've got that. That's what I've got, too.
And now I just forgot who is reading what, because I'm trying to write this down.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to read the Jennifer will read the Deb Rumsey.
Okay.
Georgette will read Beth Chance 2003.
Okay, I'm good now.
Okay.
And you go, okay.
Well, we should probably discuss when we're going to meet next time, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And who's got what role for next time?
So at the next meeting, organizer. Georgette is the moderator, supervisor, and Aisha is the recorder.
Okay.
So I'm the moderator. Okay.
Yep. Now, I did not get from, I know I was looking at our other notes, and it said that Jennifer would forward you the recorded version of the last one when she got it.
Yeah.
I didn't get anything from Jean Scott. I don't know if I need to request that from her specifically.
They deleted a couple days after. So, and I think we do need to ask her.
I sent her an email right after our last call because I remember how I said I didn't know how to end the recording.
Uh-huh.
So I did send her an email to that effect, and I didn't receive anything back. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure what happened there.
She doesn't always. I don't always get my emails back from her. I have a problem communicating with her. Through email for some reason. So
I know she. I just got an email from her where she was responding for some things from some. I know her dad died.
Oh,
so she was out for a while.
Oh,
okay.
Well, that's understandable.
I think that
yeah.
might explain it because usually yeah. she's pretty fast.
Well, we're probably okay if we don't have it. So, oh, and I want to tell you the Blackboard. We just switched to Blackboard 9, and so everything's in a tizzy over here. So as soon as I get all our passwords, I'll let you guys know.
Okay.
Okay, I just don't have it yet. But when are we meeting?
Well, this is our meeting. This meeting was supposed to have happened by September 1st, remember?
Right, this is
right.
our August meeting.
Yes.
So maybe we should get back on track, right? Like
yes.
September 25th would be the last Friday. I'm assuming Fridays, but I mean, because of that we have just done Fridays, I think, so far. But
If it's September 25th, would it be possible for us to start 15 minutes earlier? Because I have another meeting at 3.
So we could do
maybe
1:30
until 2:45.
Could we just make it 1:30 to 2:30? Because that works
okay.
better in my head. Does that work for everybody?
10:30
works for me.
I'm trying to work backwards and see what time it would be.
Oh, that would be early for you. 1:30.
That would be 10:30.
That would be 10:30. I have a class on that day that ends at 10:50.
Okay.
Oh wait, 25. So I haven't started class yet.
No, the 25th of September.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You're on a quarter system.
Yeah, so we'll still be out.
Oh, okay. Does that work for you?
That works for me.
Great. Okay.
So 1:30 to 2:30, that's Eastern Standard Time, September 25th?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Should we send the email to Bob and Andy are still going to be joining us?
I can make it then.
Okay. Okay.
And I have a correction.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing how bad my memory is, I thought I'd better check on the date of that JSE issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually 2002, not 2003.
Oh, okay. The one with Rumsey and Chance and all that?
Yep. Yeah, with all of those in it. And it's 2002, it's volume 10, number 3, I can tell you that.
And you said that was JSE?
Yeah.
It's JSE, Journal of Statistics
okay.
Education.
Yeah.
Great.
All right.
Okay. So we have our next meeting. We know what we're doing as far as our reading.
Yeah. Yep.
I think we're good.
All right. Well, y'all have a good Labor Day.
Okay.
Thank you.
Likewise.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.